All right, we're here for lectionary at lunch at Concordia Seminary. I'm Professor Tom Egger, and our readings today come from the Festival of Pentecost. And we will be looking in the Old Testament at Numbers chapter 11, beginning at verse 24. This text is, from Numbers 11 is the story of God inviting Moses and 70 elders to meet at the tent of meeting, and God places on the 70 elders his spirit, the spirit which is on Moses, he then places on the elders, and they prophesy. And to give a little context for this, its connection with Pentecost is obviously the extension of the gift of the Spirit from the One, namely the Son, upon whom the Spirit rests, and then the Spirit being given to the broader people of God. That's the shared dynamic with Pentecost, but within the context of Numbers itself, it might be useful to point out what's going on here. The book of Numbers begins, 1 verse 1, with, "Then Yahweh spoke with Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first day of the second month in the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt." And there's a couple of important things here. First of all, the centrality and importance in the book of Numbers, like all of the Pentateuch, of God speaking with Moses at Sinai at the tent of meeting. And the tent of meeting will be a central feature in our text. Also notice the time frame here. They're at Sinai, and it's still, even though we're clear to Numbers 11 now, moving through the Pentateuch, it's still only a year after they've come out of Egypt. So it took them a couple months to get to the mountain. Now they've been there for a little shy of a year, and it's just over a year since they have come out. The opening chapters of Numbers then, Numbers 1 through 4, you have a census and a taken of the people and the assignment of specific priestly duties to certain clans of the Levites, some additional laws in Numbers 5 and 6, the offering taken or collected from the Levites and the cleansing of the Levites in Numbers 7 and 8, and then in Numbers chapter 9, the celebration of the Passover. So it's the first annual celebration of the Passover since the night when they celebrated it coming out of Egypt. Numbers 10 then begins their departure from Mount Sinai, and it tells how that's going to be done, and then it records how tribe by tribe they take off. So everything that's happened in the Pentateuch now has been at leading up to Sinai and at Mount Sinai. And in Numbers chapter 10, they just make their way out. Numbers 11, then, is the first pericope that comes as they begin their journey from Sinai to the Promised Land. And it's interesting how the trip begins. It's not surprising in the story of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy that the people begin on the wrong foot, and they begin with grumbling and complaining. So the very first thing that's recorded as they journey in Numbers 11, verse 1, is that the people are complaining in the hearing of Yahweh and that Yahweh's anger is kindled. Dennis Olson, in his commentary, notes how there's three stages to this complaining and judgment then in Numbers chapter 11. It begins on the fringes of the camp. The beginning of the chapter, the fire of Yahweh burns on the edges of the camp, whatever that means. And Moses' intercession stills the fire of God's judgment. Then it spreads to the people as a whole as they complain. And then finally it will culminate in Numbers chapter 12 with the complaining and rebellion of some of the leadership, Aaron and Miriam. Our text comes then in the context of the people's complaint. And the nature of the complaint that becomes relevant for our text is they don't have meat to eat. They are tired of the manna. They've been eating it for a year, and it's kind of pathetic the way that it's pictured here in Numbers 11. The people are actually in the doors of their tents in the camp weeping aloud. It pictures them crying because they have to eat manna day after day. And it gives a big list of all the different kinds of food that they had back in Egypt. And God becomes angry. Moses comes to God and he says, "Why are you treating me so badly? Why are you dealing ill with your servant? If I found favor in your eyes, why do you make things so hard for me, God?" And he complains himself to God about how burdensome this people has become. He says, "You've said to me, carry them like a nursing infant in your arm. Well, they're too fat of a nursing infant, or too like a colicky baby or something, right? Or I'm tired of having to carry this burden. I need some help. And our text then is one of the two aspects of God's reply. God's reply to Moses is, first of all, gather 70 elders at the tent of meeting and I'll put my spirit on them. And secondly, I will bring meat and the people will have so much meat to eat that they won't only be happy, but they'll eat it until it comes out their nostrils and they're sick of it. So kind of like the kid who gets caught smoking and his dad makes him eat a pack of cigarettes or something like that. This is how God is going to judge the people. Give them so much meat that in the end they actually, it becomes a plague and they die from it. Some of them die from it. Our text, though, is just the first part of that reply of God. It's the gathering of the elders and the bestowing of the Spirit. It's interesting that the two replies of God, the gathering of the elders and the Spirit, and the sending of the quail, both revolve around the word ruach, spirit. It's God's Spirit that's given as a gift in the center of the camp at the tent of meeting. Meanwhile, out on the fringes of the camp, outside the camp, it says, or around the camp, a wind, God stirs up a wind, a ruach, and it brings these quail, which actually become judgment. So these two different aspects of God's Spirit, and it's the Spirit that's bestowed in the tent of meeting in the center of the camp where God's gracious, forgiving presence dwells, that becomes the gospel and the gift in this text. That is what our text focuses on, so we'll begin here at verse 24 and walk our way through the Hebrew. Numbers 11, verse 24. Vayetze Moshe, vayedaber el ha'am et divrei Yahweh, vayesof shivim ish mizikne ha'am, vayamed otam savivot ha'ohel. And Moses went forth from Yatzah, and he spoke to the people, direct object marker, the words of Yahweh. And he gathered, this is the call of Asaf, which is transitive to gather or collect something, and he gathered Shivim Ish Mizikne Ha'am, 70 man from the Zakain, from the elders of the people. Here, Ish obviously is functioning as a collective. You take it as a plural beside elders, plural, and the number 70. So the direct object of Moses' gathering is 70 men from among the elders of the people. This is men suggesting from among the number of, out of the number of. The next Vav consecutive, notice this Vav consecutive imperfects establish the main narrative storyline here. And he amaded Otam, them. Notice the E vowel in Vayamed under the mame. That tells you that it's a hithil. So he caused them to stand, or he stood them. Savivot ha'ohel. Savivot is the plural of the adverb saviv, meaning all around. It's just the plural form really just has the same sense as the singular, all around, you might say. Ha-ohel, the tent. Now, what is ha-ohel, the tent? It's referring to the ohel ma'od, the tent of meeting that's been mentioned previously in the prikvi, the tabernacle, in other words, that's right in the center of all of these ordered tribes. Verse 25, Vayered Yahweh ba'anan, vayedaber elav, vayatzel min haruach asher elav, vayitain al shivim ish hazakenim, vayhi kanoach alehem haruach, vayitnabeu velo yasafu. Long verse here. Continues the main storyline here with the Vav consecutive imperfect. And Yahweh came down in a cloud. And Anan is a cloud. Yahweh came down in a cloud, in other words, to the tent of meeting in the midst of these 70 from among the elders of the people. And he spoke to him, Elav, the him is Moses, so God speaks to Moses here. And he atzaled from the spirit which was upon him. Atzal is an interesting form here. You get that comets under the imperfect performative because the aleph quiesces and the vowels change a little, but it's just the call form of atzal. Oftentimes it means to take away or to reserve. So the sense here is he takes, with the preposition min, to take from. So Yahweh takes from the spirit which was upon him. Upon whom? Upon Moses, right? So already God has, in a sense, through Moses' call, apparently, and his lifting up of Moses as the leader, the deliverer, the intercessor of his people, he has placed his spirit on Moses. Now he takes, apparently, a portion of the spirit which was upon Moses. Vayitain al shiv'im ish hazakanim. And he puts, natan is to give or to put or set, and he put, and you have to supply the direct object it here, haruach, and he put the spirit upon the 70 men of the elders. Vayhi kanoach, this introduces a temporal clause now in the middle of the verse with vayhi plus k, plus the infinitive construct of nuach, which means to rest or come to rest. And it came to pass when the Spirit came to rest upon them. You see how the syntax works there? Literally, in the coming to rest upon them of the Spirit. So, and it came to pass when the Spirit came to rest upon them. Now the vav consecutive gives the main clause after the temporal clause. This happened when the other happened. What happened when the Spirit came to rest upon them? They prophesied. This is the hitzpael form of nava, same root as navi, prophet. There's some thought that the hitpael of nava has a slightly different nuance than the nifal, which is the more usual stem, that it suggests more of a frenzied or ecstatic prophetic utterance. But that's kind of debatable. Oftentimes they seem to be interchangeable, so we probably don't want to make too much of that here. This is the same root that that occurs when Saul prophesies. If you remember, right after Saul is anointed to be king, he returns to his home. There are some prophets there, and he himself begins to prophesy. And they ask, is Saul also among the prophets? This is also the hithpael, the form that's used on Mount Carmel, when Elijah and the prophets of Baal are there, and there this root is used in the hithpael to describe the frenzied work of the prophets of Baal, who are cutting themselves and prophesying in the hithpael. So it's used both of true and false prophecy. Here, obviously, it's the true work of God's Spirit. And then these last two words are notable here at the end. Velo yasafu. But they did not continue. Yasafu oftentimes means continue to do something, and so you expect an infinitive to follow it when it's used in that way. But here there's an understood infinitive to prophesy. They did not continue to prophesy. They didn't do so again, in other words. This is a one-time occurrence. All right, verse 26. By Yisha'aru shenei anashim ba'makaneh. Shem ha-ekad Eldad, v'shem ha-shani Medad, v'tanak alehem ha-ruach, v'hema ba-ketuvim, v'lo yatsu ha-ohala, v'yit-navu ba-makaneh. The first verb here becomes a plural, and the subject shifts, although we're still on the main storyline here with the vav consecutive imperfect. And they remained. Here the nifal of sha'ar. It normally occurs in the nifal. Notice the comets under the shin that tells you it's nifal. And they remained, two of the men, in the makaneh, in the camp. So, and two of the men remained in the camp. Pause. Shem ha'ekad, name of the first, or the one, Eldad, and name of the Shani, the second, Medad. So it gives their two names, Eldad and Medad. Vatanak Alehem Haruach. And the Spirit rested upon them. This is an interesting form here of the verb from nuach again, to come to rest. And it loses its hollow root. The hollow roots, or it loses its mater vowel, I should say. These hollow roots, when they're in their vav consecutive form, squeeze out that mater vowel. And here the mater vowel, even though it's normally a shurik in the middle there, nuach, it becomes a patach because of the final guttural, that kate on the end. And notice how it has a tav performative. It's a feminine singular third person verb because the subject is ruach, which is feminine. So, and the Spirit came to rest upon them, v'hema ba'ketuvim, and they were among the ones being written. Okay, all that in these two words. Hema is just the independent pronoun they. And then you have bait, the preposition, among. Ketuvim, we're used to seeing that word. That's the word for the writings, right, in the Old Testament. But here it's among those being written. It's a call passive participle. So the question is, what does this mean here? These two men, they're in the camp, they didn't go forth, their names are Eldad and Medad, and they are among those having been written. Call passive participle. Well, being written in the book of Numbers, you might think, is this just referring to all of the censuses and registrations and orderings that have gone on previously in the book? Probably not, because katav, that root, is never used. It's always pakad, to count or to take a census. So probably this refers to the ones who had been marked down as the 70 elders. It's probably just the author's way of notifying you, these are two men who didn't come forth, but they should have or could have. They were among those being, a lot of translations say, registered or something like that. Notice also the way that v'hema here, that introduces this little clause, is a disjunctive vav. So here we've had the main storyline, but now we have vav plus non-verb, which gives you parenthetical information. So there's these two men, they didn't go forth, the Spirit came to rest on them, they were among those having been registered. And now another, this continues this parenthetical thought, and they had not gone forth to the ohel. Notice ha ohela with a directive hey on the end. They had not gone forth to the tent of meeting. So what happens to them? Again, the Spirit has come to rest on them, and now the next thing that happens to them, vav consecutive imperfect, back to the main storyline, and they also hit Pael of Navah. They also prophesied, where? In the camp. So this giving of the Spirit, perhaps significantly, begins in the sanctuary of God, but it even here in this narrative in the Pentateuch, begins to come out into the camp itself by whatever strange circumstance kept these two men from going out. And we're not told why these two men didn't go forth to the tent of meeting. Verse 27. Vayaratz ha-na'ar vayaged l'moshe vayomer, or vayomar, Eldad u'medad mit nab'im ba'makaneh. Okay, this initial verb is a hollow root from roots, means to run. And the young man, or the servant, the na'ar, ran, and he nagaded, this is a first nun root, a hithil, meaning to tell or to report, and he reported to Moses, and he said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. This is a hitpael participle here with this mit prefix. Who is this Na'ar? It's interesting. It doesn't just say a lad. It says the lad. So who is the lad? Well, I don't know. There's no indication. This root, Na'ar, this word, Na'ar, it's a very common word, but it's nowhere to be found in the Pentateuch. From Exodus, really, I mean, it occurs a couple times in legislation and stuff like that, but there's no sense of, oh, the Na'ar is referring back to this particular person. Could it have been Joshua? That might be one thought, that Joshua might be Moses' Na'ar, servant. But It doesn't work very well in this context because Joshua is going to raise an objection in the very next verse, and it doesn't seem like he's the one who's coming forth. Also, it seems like Joshua would have perhaps been among those who were at the tent of meeting. He was often at the tent of meeting with Moses. So do what you want to with Na'ar here. I'm not sure myself what to do with it. But the lad, whoever that is, comes out and reports what's going on to Moses. Verse 28, Vaya'an Yehoshua, here's Joshua, Vaya'an Yehoshua ben Nun, Masharet Moshe, Mibba Kurav, Vayomer Adoni Moshe, K'la'aim. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the Masharet, the servant or minister, that's actually a PL participle, but it's used as a substantive here, just has the sense of servant or minister, the minister of Moses, from his youth, a bakor is a young man, and in the plural, bakarim, it has the sense of youth, kind of in an abstract sense. So from, that's a temporal use of min, since his youth, in other words. So since Joshua's youth, he's been the masharet of Moses, and now he answers. So again, since he's replying here, he's probably not the na'ar that came out from the camp. It probably is saying he was standing there with Moses at the tent. He replies, Adoni Moshe, Adoni here is evocative, my lord, Moses, and then an imperative from Kala. Kala means to prevent or to keep back or restrain. And he's saying to Moses, restrain them. Third masculine plural suffix on the end here, restrain them. And Moses replies, verse 29, Vayomer lo Moshe, Ha mekane atali, umi yitain kol am Yahweh nevi'im, ki yitain Yahweh et ruko aleihem. And Moses said to him, and here we have a PL participle with an interrogative hey on the front. Since it has an initial schwa, you have a patak, even though it's an interrogative hey. He's asking, literally it says here, Makane ata, you are being jealous. You are envying. And so it turns it into a question. Are you envying Li, Laman of advantage or the dative of interest here? Are you jealous for my sake, in other words? Umi yatain, this combination me plus natan oftentimes is a way, it's an idiom expressing a wish or desire. Would that or oh that. O that kol am Yahweh nevi'im, O that all of the people of Yahweh were prophets. Ki yitain Yahweh et ruko aleihem, that Yahweh would put, read the imperfect there as a modal in this expressing of desire, and that Yahweh would put his spirit upon them. Notice the ruko here, his spirit. So God is taking the spirit that is resting upon Moses, and he's putting it upon the men, but here it's clear that this is God's own spirit. It's not somehow some mystical spirit of Moses or something. We're talking about the Holy Spirit in this text, his spirit upon them. And verse 30, by Yeasef Moshe el Makaneh, and Moses gathered in the Niphal here, so gathered himself. It's kind of strange to have one person gathering, but he gathered himself to the camp again. He returned to the camp, in other words, and then it broadens the subject of the verb, he and the elders of Israel, who, the Ziknei Yisrael. That kind of brings this part of the pericope then to a close. They go back to the camp after all this has happened. What's the significance of all this? Well, we don't have time to go into it greatly, but I think in overarching terms, it's really helpful in this pericope to see the way in which God's Spirit emerges from the center of the camp, the sanctuary, the holy place of God's dwelling, begins to make his influence out into the camp, and is the one bright spot in this entire section of Numbers. This whole section of Numbers is full of the complete wretchedness and hopelessness of this people. You have their grumbling all through this chapter. That's all they do is grumble and provoke Yahweh. In chapter 12, we're going to have the rebellion of Miriam and Aaron, who contest Moses' authority. In chapters 13 and 14, the spies explore the land, and the people refuse to go in and take possession of the land and doom the first generation to consign themselves to 40 years in the wilderness. In chapter 16, you have Korah's rebellion, where the Levitic priests, some of them, rise up against Moses and his authority. So this whole section of Numbers is about the wretchedness and hopelessness of this people. It's really just an extension of this is a stiff-necked people that we saw back at Sinai at the beginning, the Golden Calf episode. But here there is the sense that how is Moses going to deal with the complete hopelessness of this situation, a sinful people trying to be the people of God and the holy God trying to dwell in the midst of this people? The gift of the Spirit is going to be God's answer to this, in one aspect of God's answer to this. So we see this then in the ministry of Jesus as he bestows his authority and his Spirit upon the 70 whom he sends out to be his ministers, and then on the day of Pentecost, not just the apostles, although he does pour out his Spirit on the apostles, but there's this sense that now the Holy Spirit is to be the gift of all the people of God. And Moses' wish, which is just a wish here in this passage, oh, that all the people of Yahweh, God would put his Spirit on them. This is actually then fulfilled on the day of Pentecost.
Can I ask one question real quick?
You know what? I'll stick around. We better ask questions at the end.